Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
We are joined today by Ellen Vogel, who is a frequent contributor to America and a professor of law at St. John's University.
Thank you.
Great to have you here.
Hi, thanks very much. I just want to give you an update just this morning. Well, backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
As we heard on Monday, the Supreme Court decided not to hear several appeals from various same-sex rulings. But yesterday, the Ninth Circuit out of California, hearing cases from Idaho and Nevada, that court also issued a decision striking down the state's bans on same-sex marriage. This morning, Justice Kennedy from the Supreme Court issued a stay of that decision.
Okay.
So this is a fluid issue. It's possible that the Supreme Court will decide to hear this case from the Ninth Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Already, the litigants there have begun the groundwork to appeal that, and they're saying that this case is slightly different from the other cases, and that's why they think, they hope, the Supreme Court will take it on. It's the Ninth Circuit case is based on Equal Protection Clause as opposed to the Due Process Clause.
Okay.
So there is a difference, and we'll see what they decide to do.
Yeah.
One reason I think perhaps they hadn't taken the other cases is because so far all of the circuit courts have agreed that bans on same-sex marriage are unconstitutional. So if that continues to be the case, there's no controversy among the circuits, there's no split among the circuits, and there's no necessity for the Supreme Court to issue a ruling that would cover the whole country.
Right. So really what you have here is the U.S. Supreme Court, which is a court of appeal, right?
Yes.
You know, and courts of appeal usually make decisions when there's a disagreement among lower courts, right?
Well, for
right.
the highest court
right.
to do that, yes.
And so, and what the justices basically said on Monday is, you know, until there's a disagreement, right, among these lower courts, which have, as you say, have all found these marriage bans unconstitutional, we really don't have a dog in this fight yet.
If I'm correct, they did not issue a reason
right.
for why they declined to hear the cases. That's a supposition
yeah, right.
on our part.
This by implication,
all
right,
they do
yeah.
is say no.
Right.
So the rationale could be because there's no split. It could be there has to be four judges who agree by
mm-hmm.
by court rules. Four judges have to agree, and it could just be frankly the judges who are in favor of a constitutional protection for same-sex marriage just
mm-hmm.
think. Why risk it? We're,
right.
you know, the lower courts are holding the way that we think we would have held, so there's no reason to bring it on. The four justices who were definitely, I would say, opposed to same-sex marriage being constitutionally protected also may not want to bring it because they're not quite sure how that fifth judge will go.
Mm-hmm.
And they would rather, I think, have lower court rulings upholding a constitutional protection rather than have a Supreme Court decision, which would be much harder to change later on,
sure.
grant that right.
Right. The so a number of people have said, a number of legal analysts have said that this creates a certain inevitability about the you know gay marriage in this country, and that eventually probably all of these bans will fall. Is that saying too much about the impact of this decision or you know decision not to decide?
Probably not. Probably
yeah.
not. There are now many same-sex people who are married to each other.
Right.
So that's a legal reality. And it is difficult, just from a practical point of view, to backtrack
mm-hmm.
and to say that those marriages are somehow now invalid.
Mm-hmm.
So from a practical standpoint, difficult. But the law and the judges don't look at practicality often. And that's not their purpose, or in many instances, at least in interpreting the Constitution, their job is to interpret the Constitution.
Right.
And so I do think that it's possible, certainly possible, that some of the circuit courts could say that there is no constitutional right to same-sex marriage. As I said, there's two different arguments being made. And one is a due process argument that there's a liberty interest in marriage
mm-hmm.
and that liberty interest extends to same-sex marriage.
Right. And so to deny people then the same-sex couples the ability to marry is to deny them due process.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a good legal argument against that, which is that the due process rights that were granted by the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment apply only to fundamental liberty rights that basically were, the argument goes, were in existence at the time the Constitution was written. Right. And so although the right to marry certainly is a constitutional right, that was declared in Loving versus Virginia, the case that banned discriminations against mixed marriages in racial context, that is interpreted by, you know, the anti-same-sex marriage people, if you will, as only applying to what's traditional marriage.
Right.
So that the traditionalists would say you're adding a whole layer now of same-sex marriage rights, which didn't exist at the time, clearly didn't exist in colonial times, and so it doesn't exist now. The other argument that's made and that the Ninth Circuit based their decision on is the Equal Protection Clause, which basically says all laws should be applied to similar people similarly.
Right.
And so that doesn't require a finding that there's a fundamental right to same-sex marriage. It does require, though, a finding that the laws have to have, and this is the question, whether there has to be a rational basis behind these state laws that ban same-sex marriage, or whether it has to be more than a rational basis, a heightened level of state interest involved. And that's what maybe the Supreme Court will decide, because we don't know how to treat sexual orientation. We know how to treat race. There's almost never going to be any basis for making a race-based decision that's constitutional.
Right.
Sex-based decisions, rarely will they be held to constitutional, but there are situations in which they will be, but there's this heightened level of scrutiny that's applied to any law that's sex-based.
Right.
But when it comes to sexual orientation, as far as constitutional rights go, we have no idea.
And that raises an interesting question about then how do we interpret the Constitution, right? Because when you look at I was in Washington over the weekend where they had the Red Mass, which is the traditional mass where judges and attorneys and the justices of the Supreme Court come together at the beginning of their term to pray for success. And, you know, there were lots of people outside protesting and, with signs for or against various things. But one had the feeling that they thought that they were speaking to legislators rather than to judges, right? And there's a way in which, certainly in the media, but I think in the popular imagination of Americans, we relate to the U.S. Supreme Court as if it were a third house of Congress, right? But there's a very different kind of decision-making going on here, isn't there?
Very different. And one thing is because they're appointed for life. So there's no elections.
No
elections. They have no political pressure on them other than what they might feel personally. They cannot be removed from office, barring some very, very horrible action. And so you're right. The public who protest outside the courthouse could better expend their energies perhaps elsewhere.
Right.
Now, the justices are human, and I'm sure that at some point they recognize that there's an impact to what they do. And sometimes they're more vocal about that recognition of the impact that they have than others. But their job is to interpret the Constitution, as you say, and to apply other federal laws as well and state laws as well. So they are not – this is the most undemocratic part of our government, and yet we rely on it to really uphold our principles of freedom and individual freedom, so almost against ourselves. You know, the court is there really to protect the minority against the majority, and we favor democracy and we favor majority rule, but the Constitution is written to protect minorities as well. And so the court is tries to be put on blinders, if you will, when they are deciding this, and just look to what does the Constitution state, what to have other previous decisions held that interpret that Constitution, and when federal laws are applied, what does the federal law state?
Sure.
Do you think, as perhaps as you said, if same-sex marriage is legalized in more and more states, that we'll see an increase in cases of religious freedom surrounding providing those goods and services for same-sex weddings, the flowers, the bakeries? I know there's been a lot of cases surrounding that, and I read an article the other day about a couple who has a bakery, and they're concerned about the financial impact of the fines that they have to pay and what it means for their own personal beliefs.
Right. This is an interesting intersection now, because when the courts look at the same-sex marriage cases, they're not religious liberty cases.
Right.
They are, as I said, due process cases, equal protection clause cases. They're looking at the state laws or the state constitutions that ban marriage, and they're not at all looking at religious issues, although many people have very strong pro and con ideas about this based on their religious beliefs. But as you say, when we get to the provision of services and also when we get to government officials who are responsible for issuing marriage licenses, then we have the individual religious liberties of those people.
Right. It becomes even more complicated.
That now are conflicting with this right of the individuals to have same-sex marriage if that right does exist.
Sure.
So in Oregon, for example, there's a case where the government is this the state the law was the ban on same-sex marriage was held to be unconstitutional, but National Organization for Marriage, I think, is mm-hmm. fighting hard on behalf of its members who are service providers for wedding, the bakers, the florists, the caterers, and also for local officials who issue marriage licenses, who find a conscientious objection almost to right. involving themselves with same-sex marriage. And that will be a different question. Now there's a different question. And it will be applied differently to government officials because when an individual has religious rights, but when they take on the job of a government official
right.
in that official capacity, they have to act
exactly.
as the government,
mm-hmm.
not as themselves.
Right.
Different case for the bakers and the photographers. And this is where the Hobby Lobby decision starts to come into play because Hobby Lobby, as you remember, with regard to the Affordable Health Care Act, talked about the rights of business. There was a small, closely held corporation to assert a religious objection to a mandate. Now, the big difference in the Hobby Lobby case and these same-sex marriage cases is Hobby Lobby is based on a statute. It's not based on the First Amendment.
Mm, right.
The Religious Freedom Restoration Act, it gives individuals, persons, is the language of the law, rights that are not guaranteed by the First Amendment.
Well, Alan Bogle from St. John's University and a contributor to America, thank you for
thank
being
you.
With us today.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.